And if they don't like you, they're the ones that you get the feedback from more than the folks back home. You may get a few nasty letters, but then you go to work and your colleagues say, you know, how are you going to vote on this bill? Well, I'm going to vote this way. Well, what's your problem? Well, maybe I won't vote that way, you know. So he thinks, I want to be liked by my friends in office, by the media, by those people there. And so he puts up with that 15% rating so that he can be liked. When he goes to work, people will say, hi there, you're a nice guy, you know. Want to go to the party tonight? And whether he goes to the party or not, just the fact that he's invited makes him feel loved and wanted there. So the politician has to be able to overcome this groupthink. So I won't go through all of them, but there's 9 of them all together. 9 different powerful influences on our congresspeople that take them away from the will of the people. And what I've determined when I looked at the situation is that even though the will of the majority of the people is far from perfect, it's about 10 times better than what we're getting in Congress now, because they are not following the will of the people, they're following a fringe will. Both parties have been following a fringe will for some time, and the will of the people would be far superior to the will of Congress in its present situation. So by switching over to the people taking charge and expressing their will and forcing our Congress people to follow the will of the people, we can put the nation back on track to healing. After all, the average people, when they understand that they can't live on credit cards. They understand that if somebody gives them an unlimited credit card, they couldn't just go out and spend unlimited money if they have to pay it back. Now, Congress borrows money knowing we have to pay it back, but they act like it's unlimited. They act like, well, that's all right because, you know, we don't have to worry about it the next few months at least, or the next year. So, you know, we'll just go with it. And so, yeah, I used to think that the Democrats hated George Bush so much was because he spent so much money that when the Democrats got in office, they wouldn't have any money to spend. And I think there's a lot of truth to that. You know, they say they hated Bush because of the war and because Bush lied and Bush did all these things and Cheney was Darth Vader. But I really think that the real reason they hated Bush was that Bush spent so much money that they thought there wouldn't be any left for them. But I didn't plan on Obama getting in and having the creative chutzpah to borrow unlimited sums and put us under the tremendous risk he's putting under to spend us more trillions in debt. So much in debt that the interest on our national debt could wind up being our biggest payment one of these first years. So I didn't think they... I thought when they got in office, they'd look at the books and think, well, Bush spent so much money, there's no money left. Well, boy, was I wrong. they found all kinds of money to spend.
All income tax goes to the national debt, doesn't go for any government services, doesn't cover it, so they borrow more money just to pay the interest on the debt. So it's impossible to ever pay the debt off being in that situation.
Yeah, about the only way we're going to pay the debt off is through inflation and pay it off with inflationary dollars. It's about the only way we're going to be able to do it, and that might be a way out, hopefully.
Where is the government borrowing money from China?
We're borrowing money from everybody we can, including printing up new money.
China's the largest.
And making out loans, home loans and business loans are the main source of currency in this country today. Because they write they take your promissory note, and that's money to them, and then they fractional reserve it, you know, $100,000. Now, if you sign a promissory note for $100,000, now that bank has $900,000 it can loan out to other people. Well, where'd that $900,000? You know, it's called money from nothing.
So anyway, my basic idea is this, is we produce co-legislators. A co-legislator is somebody that signs up under a politician to legislate with a politician. Now, to be able to have a co-legislator, we need a politician to cooperate. So we create an organization that finds people to run for office that is willing to cooperate with us. So let's say we trust old Blaine over there. So we approach him and say, Blaine, if we put you in office as a senator or representative, are you willing to make a commitment that you will vote according to the will of your co-legislators? And if Blaine said, no, I can't handle that, I have to vote according to my principles, we can say, okay, well, we'll move on to somebody else. Larry, are you willing to do this? Larry says, no, I'm not willing to do it. Also, if we approach him, he says, no, I'm not a citizen, sorry, but I would be happy to do it. Wren, we approach Wren, and he says, yeah, I'll do it. What the heck? Pays good. Pays better than being a bus driver. So, are you still a bus driver? Okay, he says his pays being better than a bus driver. Heck, I'll do it. What the heck? And so Wren agrees to do it. Now, we approach him again. Now you understand it. You're going to have co-legislators, and if you have like 10,000 and 6,000 of them say you vote yes on a bill, it doesn't matter whether you believe in the bill or not, you have to vote yes. Are you willing to do that on every issue? What?
No.
No? Okay, well, we move on to somebody else. And so we find somebody that says yes. Yes, I'm willing to vote on every issue according to the will of the people. It doesn't matter.
Could these be like spiritually advanced, or could they be?
No, it doesn't matter. Polar? We don't look at spiritually advanced. We don't look at smartness. We just look at honesty. The person willing to give his word and follow through on his word.
So why should it be a human being? He can be a machine.
No, machine can't do it. Because once he gets in, he has to be a teacher. Okay? Yeah, he has to teach his constituents. Okay, that's his job. His job is to be a manager. His job is not to be a power broker once he gets in. But anyway, we find somebody that says yes. Somebody, you know, reasonably intelligent that says yes. And once he gets in, we tell him his job description. The job description that our congressmen think they have now is to spend our money and find ways to tax us more so they can have more money to spend. That's what they think their job description is. We have to change their job description. We tell the guy, okay, your job description is not to spend money, not to tax us, but to get in and vote according to the will of the people no matter what happens, no matter which lobbyist comes and tries to twist your arm, no matter which party leader tries to twist your arm, no matter who invites you to parties, no matter what media people write about you, you vote according to the will of the people. Are you willing to do that?
I'd be willing to.
Yes.
That.
What?
I'd be willing to.
You'd be willing to do it now? Okay. Especially. Okay.
Well, what if the will of the people is wrong?
You still got to do it.
Educate the people.
Right. So that's what you do. So he becomes, we tell him, your new job description is a teacher and a manager. Those are two important jobs. Every business person, his job isn't to spend money and to take money from the employees. His job is to manage and to teach and to educate. That's what people do in business. So we want you to do in Congress what every good businessman does in business. Teach, educate the people, and manage them. Okay, so he gets in. When a bill comes up, you read it over, figure out if you like it or not. And if you think your co-legislators are not going to favor it, but you do favor it, well, maybe you see something that they don't see. So your job is to educate them. So say this bill is coming up on the spending project where we're kind of going to have to fork out $1 billion on something, and you think it's worth it, but you're afraid your co-legislators will vote no. So your job is then to educate them. So on the internet, you present this bill, and you say, now here's the 10 reasons why I think you, my co-legislators, should support me voting for this bill. So he educates them. And if he makes sense, anytime you make sense to the average people, the majority will usually vote correctly. Majority almost always see correctly once the pure facts are out there for them to see. It's only when they're deceived, and when you get a tyrant in control, the first thing he does is take charge of the press. So the information, wrong information, is filtered down to the people, and that way they can be controlled. They can only be controlled when they don't receive correct information. But when people receive correct information, they will almost always vote in a common sense way. So if he's a good educator, and if the bill is important, if the $1 billion is important to spend, he will be able to convince his co-legislators. Now, it could be he's wrong, but so he calls for a vote, and whatever his co-legislators say, if they say yes, then he votes yes. If they say no, he votes no. But he has his chance to sway them. He has to try to talk them into it if he really believes in voting yes or no on a certain bill. So he manages, he filters information, he writes up his proposal, why a bill is good or bad, and he tries to influence his co-legislators properly. But the common sense people, once they get the facts out there, if their representatives trying to pull a wool over their eyes and just going along with party leaders or lobbyists or somebody like that or large corporations, the average people is going to see a smell of coffee, and they're going to vote normally, a common sense way. The Book of Mormon makes a real interesting statement around this. It says that the majority of the people will generally pick the right path. It says, but if the time ever comes that the majority of the people select the wrong path, he says, then they are nigh unto destruction. In other words, the only time that the majority of the people, on the average, will pick the wrong path will be when they're nigh unto destruction, when they're ready to be, when destruction is imminent. In other words, the people themselves are so corrupt that the best thing that can happen to them is to be destroyed and start over again. And that happens with many civilizations. If a civilization becomes entirely corrupt, then it's possible that the majority of the people will be corrupt too. But if the majority of the people is corrupt, then our representatives will even be more corrupt. But we're at the point right now to where the majority of the people still have some common sense. If we let this continue long enough, the majority of the people will even be lost. So the turnaround has to happen within a generation, or the majority could be lost.